6 minutes after 8 o'clock, 8:06, Talk of the Town. My name is Mike Walsh, and a very good Friday morning to you, and a very good Friday morning to Democratic Councilwoman at Large, Lori Arcuri. Lori, if I could get you just a couple inches away from the microphone, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming in today.
Thanks, Mike. I wish I could say, I'm sorry, I got to leave right now because you just called my numbers. But I'm staying. Thanks for inviting me.
Okay. Well, it's a pleasure to have you. We're going to talk today about the master plan, or I guess we should say the proposed master plan, because it really has not been adopted yet. So, and in defense of Mayor David Raffaro, it should be pointed out that this really was not the mayor's plan. It's not like David Raffaro sat down in his chambers and said, okay, I've got this grand vision for the city. Here's what I want to do. This is the way I think things should be done. That's not what this plan is about. Actually, the plan was conceived by a lot of different people. There's been a lot of input into the plan by the people that it will impact in the community. So I guess the community is well represented in this plan. Now, that having been said, without regard to any specifics yet, you think maybe the plan is possibly a little bit too aggressive, maybe a little bit too lofty, would you say?
Well, you're right in the fact that this is the people's plan. It was a representation of about 50 people in the community that came together and formulated this vision that they have for the city. I question if 50 people is a good representation. Mm-hmm. Not everyone goes to the meetings that were held where they could have provided some input. So, and you know, what are the credentials of those folks?
Well, how did they come up with those 50 people, or do you know that?
I think they were pretty much people that volunteered to participate in the process.
Okay.
So.
All right. And we should also point out that the master plan has not yet formally been adopted. And how does that happen? How does this master plan become law, I guess?
Well, it would come before the council for a vote. That hasn't occurred yet, and I'm not sure if, in fact, the plan will stay as it is currently today or if there will be other changes to it. Certainly, it's pretty lofty, the plans that they have, and I really question a good number of things that are in the plan that are giving me cause for concern, and I'm sure others as well.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of those specifically.
Okay.
Someone might argue that it's better to aim high and, you know, shoot high and hit a little bit low rather than to shoot low and hit real low. You get where I'm coming from?
Yeah, sure.
You know, a lot of people will say, well, sure, it's lofty, but hey, we got to be lofty. We have to think big. We have to think in grand terms here. Now, how would you address that, first of all?
Well, I think there's reality, and then there's things that are really unrealistic that are in the plan. And I agree. I think that you should have lofty goals, mm-hmm. but within reason, so that you have something to strive for that's attainable. For example, in the plan, you see looking at 70% home ownership. Is that really realistic? And others will say, well, you need high goals. Well, this isn't a sports game. Okay, mm-hmm. You know, win one for the Gipper. This is talking about city finances and whatnot. And 70% home ownership, while that is something that we would all agree that we would like to see, 40% of the population in the city is receiving services. And you have additional parts of the population on top of that. So maybe you're talking 50% that are the working poor and that will maybe never be able to achieve home ownership. So is 70% really realistic?
Now, I obviously have not seen the plan. We have a goal, or the master plan has a goal of 70% home ownership. Does it address that? Does it say how do we get from where we are now to 70%, or does it just simply put that out there? Because, sure, anybody can say that, but does it address the issue of getting us to there?
There are advisory committees that are looking at implementation plans. I am aware of that. There are some things that are currently being looked at that hopefully would address the home ownership piece by making it affordable for people to do plumbing and electrical work in their homes. Mm-hmm. I really have to question the legislation that's currently in committee that I oversee, because I think we're lowering our standards on both ends, putting people in jeopardy because of risks for safety, mm-hmm. Should there be electrical fires, plumbing problems. You can look at the impact on neighbors and neighborhoods should things go wrong. And I've got serious concerns regarding that. And that is one of the mechanisms that I know that they were pursuing in order to make it affordable for people to purchase their own homes because of the upgrades that would be needed. But again, looking at the aging housing structure, you really need qualified, licensed tradesmen, professional tradesmen coming in and doing this kind of work. We don't want to lower our standards and put people at risk.
Sure. Now, and I don't want to get too far away from the master plan here, but do you have any kind of number for me at current percentage of homeowners as opposed to renters in the city? And where are we now? How far do we have to go to get to 70%?
I couldn't tell you the.
Okay, but it's probably substantial. And if that seems like a lofty goal, then that's probably a substantial jump. All right, there's one. Talk to me about other specific concerns that you have after seeing this master plan.
Well, you know, there's a focus on the arts, and I think, you know, the arts that we have in our community are really a great asset to our community. Looking at further development of that, I think that's great. But to make it part of a focus, you know, I have questions, you know. Sure, it will help perhaps with tourism and bringing more people into the city, but is it really going to create more jobs? You know, it may create some, but it's not going to create a substantial number of jobs that would have a positive impact. We can look at, you know, the use of EDGE that will bring in, hopefully, new business and economic growth and development. And do they really have a proven track record that we should be placing all our cards with them for growth and development? And my biggest issue, really, with the master plan is no place in the plan does it address cutting the cost of government. If you're going to stimulate economic growth and draw people to the city, it has to be affordable for people to live here. That means the taxes have to come down. We know we're looking at moving into another bad year of taxes coming up. We need to reduce those costs to attract businesses to want to come here. And the plan doesn't address it anywhere. We need to look at what? We need to look at city government and how government's being run. And can we cut costs there so that we're not passing on these costs to city residents?
Given the current economic climate,
absolutely,
that is not going to be an easy task.
Absolutely.
That will certainly be something to look at. Now, how long has it been since the city's had a master plan? It's been years and years, 50 years maybe?
Yeah, it's been a long, long time. Right. And, you know, like I said when we started, it does have some positive aspects to having a master plan. And it is something that we need to have in place. I just question the oversight and some of the direction that the plans are taking. You know, you can look at the development of the waterways, and that's part of the plan as well. That, I think, is really an excellent idea. I think in communities where this has been a focus to revitalize their waterways and clean up their waterways, obviously there's been a lot of industry and so forth that's impacted those where there's been contamination, but we're ready for that at this point. Sure. In our community. And yeah, I think that's a real positive step for us. I question, however, you know, moving a stadium down there, number one, can our community afford it? And, you know, is it a field of dreams? You know, you can laugh and say, oh, yeah, okay, build it and they will come. But truly, we haven't been able to attract major teams long enough to stay here, number one. Mm-hmm. And we're going to build it in hope and use it for, you know, maybe local use. Okay, that would be nice. But at what cost? And on whose shoulders is this going to fall? And you turn around and you look at the community.
You would agree there are bright spots to the master plan, and to some point it will serve the city well, and obviously you have your cautions as well, as we have talked about. How much has been invested so far in just drafting this master plan, just getting all this together? Do you have any kind of idea where we are financially?
Absolutely. You know, the plan itself costs $325,000.
So we got a pretty good investment into this so far.
You know, we were fortunate that we did receive $125,000 from Assemblywoman Roanne DeStito, and that certainly helped defray it, but you're still talking $200,000 strapped on the back of the city and the city taxpayers. Okay. It's a lot of money.
So if the master plan does not get adopted, where do we go from there? Is it possible that we can adopt pieces of the master plan? Can we pick and choose and go through this and say, well, you know what? Harbor Point is a wonderful idea. We really look at this, and we believe that 10 years down the road, 20, 30, 50 years down the road, this is going to be one of the jewels of not just Utica, but of the Mohawk Valley. But the stadium, you know what? I just don't think, I don't see minor league ball working here. Why don't we scratch that? I think that's an investment that's not prudent right now. There's better places to put the money. There are better investments. Is it going to be possible to kind of rewrite the master plan?
It hasn't been finalized, to my knowledge, at this point. And I certainly have hopes that some of the things that I've addressed will institute some changes and get people thinking maybe, you know, a little bit, maybe hopefully more realistically. I would hope that this plan, whatever ends up being in its final production, I would hope that it would be something that would come before the people for a vote, mm-hmm. for referendum. I don't see it happening this year for this election, and I only say that because of the time elements involved to get something on as a referendum item. I don't know if we could meet that deadline at this point and institute changes other than the way the plan currently is. But I really would like to see it go as a referendum item for a vote to the public. Then you get the full accounting of the people and their wishes and a reflection versus, you know, 50 people that have come together to develop a plan.
And when should this all be tied up? When would this all go into effect?
I don't have an answer for you as far as that goes. I don't know how much longer they'll be looking at revisions and finalizing the plan itself, and even, you know, when we can expect to see it come before the council. We just have a preliminary plan right now.
It's been 50 years in the making, so let's not rush it at this point. It's been that long without a master plan, so let's make sure and get this one right. And we certainly appreciate your coming in today. Lori R. Curie, thank you. And can I call on you again when issues come up like this?
Always.
Is there anything you want to throw in? Did we miss anything? Because I see a kind of scanning notes there.
The only other, you know, when we talk about reducing the cost of government, you can even look at recent events and... could we do better than what has been done?
Can you give me some recent events?
We just recently saw a 39% increase in a raise for one of the marketing coordinators. 39% increase in your pay. You and I would both like that, I'm sure.
How does that happen? Can you explain to me how? And I'm not passing judgment on that raise, or saying that the position is worth it or is not worth it. I just wonder how raises like that happen, who has to approve them, because it seems to me that most people, if there was enough people watching that someone eventually would say 39% is pretty lofty. I mean, that's that's well ahead of
the increase came from the mayor. It did go through the ENA estimate and apportionment committee, and it was passed through there. That doesn't come before the council.
Okay.
So, and I think, I don't want to say. Not sure what the vote was on it. You can look at recently, again, passing $10,000 for Utica Monday night. And the council really did due diligence, and we scrutinized monies that would be dedicated to that over this year's budget. We cut it significantly, and for a lot of reasons we cut it. We can look at a number of things with maybe conflicts of interest with Lynn Michelini, who sits on the board for Utica Monday night and receiving funds from Utica Monday night. That's kind of a little conflict of interest there, I would say. And, you know, according to the 2007 financials, 62% of the monies that were raised, she, you know, took for herself. $7,000 of it, and we're talking a total of $125,000 almost that were received for these, for this Utica Monday night back in 2007, to have 62% of it go towards the person, and 25% of the funds was used on the entertainment. There's a big gap there. We can look at, you know, the recent appointment of Mr. Neshi's job. You know, you say, well, this is a retired person. You know, truly, he's a New Hartford resident.
Let's talk about that briefly. Where do we draw the line there as far as residency laws go?
Well, again, okay, and you could read in the newspaper that, you know, they're saying that they're not going to uphold this right now because there's legal suits and some of the labor unions are challenging the law that was passed. But the truth of the matter is it came before the public. It was overwhelmingly passed. The public wants people that work for the city. They want them to live in the city. So, okay, he doesn't live in the city. I think there really were four reasons why maybe the appointment could have looked in a different direction. And that's number one, really, is the residency issue. You know, he's a relative of the mayor. Okay, so that can be scrutinized again. He's retired from the Utica Police Department. And look at all of what has been in the media, what is really being investigated, I think statewide and even on a higher level nationwide, for those folks that receive pensions yet come back to the well, so to speak, mm-hmm. to draw more water and collect additional monies, even though they're collecting their pension funds. And that's a huge issue. And, you know, what are the qualifications? Okay, he reviewed timesheets. I don't know if that qualifies you for human resource work and responsibilities. So I think, you know, just given those questionable areas there, you could have looked in a different direction and perhaps better filled the position with somebody that maybe was more qualified.
Well, we have the mayor on a somewhat regular basis, so excuse me, I certainly will address those issues with him. Just the issues that you've brought up in the past 2 minutes lead me to believe that we have at least one more good show with you at some point, that we need to talk about those in further detail. But I understand that you have places to be this morning. I won't keep you any more than that. It's 23 minutes after 8 o'clock. 8:23, we've been talking to Democratic Councilwoman at Large, Lori R. Curie. Thank you so much for taking some time sharing your concerns with us today.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
You bet.